Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. He's Anthony Pusick. How are you, sir?
Oh, Don, it was a fun week, fun weekend.
Yeah.
Hockey, I'm sorry I missed you on Friday, but you held it down.
Yes, thank you so much for thinking of me and having the kind words. I was a little floored. He went back and he listened to the podcast.
I did.
I thought that was very, very nice of you. You didn't
and
have
And you almost figured it out. You almost figured out the scheduling snafu that I guess we'll get into a little bit, but I'm trying to figure out what took the West so long.
Yeah.
Because even with the Dallas-Colorado scheduling issue that could have arisen because you have the Mavericks and you have the Nuggets.
Right.
Neither of those teams were going to play around the same time at the same place. So I don't know what took so long to release the schedule and why Edmonton's starting later. Edmonton-Vancouver, but whatever.
Again, I don't know what concerts there are. I think as far as what took so long for the times to be announced, I think it really came down to if Vegas had won last night and Colorado was home, then it would be a little bit more difficult with the time. Dallas, you can slide that in as a 9:30 Eastern time start, 8:30 in Dallas. But who knows what the heck is going on. I'm not going to hurt my brain to figure it out. We finally have somewhat – we've got the schedule. We just don't know the times beyond Game 3 of the Eastern Conference second round, as the NHL likes to call it. Quickly, before I forget, EJ Raddick is going to join us on Wednesday. That's my bad, because I had a lot of things fluid in taping this, and I didn't want to have to hang around all day. We started taping this after 2 o'clock Eastern time, so we were limited. So EJ will be back with us. All right, where to begin? I'd like to begin, Anthony, if you don't mind, with what I thought was a brilliant Game 7 in Boston between the Leafs and the Bruins.
Oh, man.
And I brought this up on Friday. Since you listened to the podcast, you heard that, in my opinion, I think the narrative has changed in Toronto based on how they got off the mat down 3-1. They win games 5 and 6 without Austin Matthews, who spoke today, said he was ill, played through it in game 3, just couldn't in game 4. If I had to guess based on what he had said, it sounded like he suffered a concussion. But again, don't hold me to that, but that's what it kind of felt like to me. He played and had an assist on the one goal in game 7. But do you agree with me that the way they played in games 5 and 6 without Austin and playing and putting up a valiant fight in game 7 and really at times, honestly, in game 6 and 7 were the much better team? And you know, Boston just could not get shots on goal, especially in the first period of game 6 and 7. Do you think that that's enough to change the narrative of we've got to blow this thing up to, hey, maybe it just wasn't our season?
I don't know, Don. I'd like to say yes, but does Sheldon Keefe stay? Like, and now you got Rick Bonus retiring in Winnipeg. It seems like the carousel of coaches that could be changing in this offseason is massive. And you're looking at another situation where, yes, they did come back from down 3-1 and they forced an overtime and they almost won on an own goal less than 4 seconds left in the third period. If Swayman doesn't have his pad out there,
yeah.
Boy, the narrative there is what the heck happened to Boston 2 years in a row. But it seemed like such an innocent play, and you see Marner not back-checking. You saw, I think it was Riley that kind of was slow to the reaction on that ricochet that ended up being the game-winning goal for Pasternak. And you think to yourself, what do they need? They seemingly have the offensive firepower. Do they need another defender? Do they need better goaltending?
Yes.
I think goaltending is yes, and I think defender is yes, but with all the pieces that they have, are they going to move on from a Marner? Are they going to move on from one of these core four pieces? I don't think Tavares is going anywhere. I don't think Matthews is going anywhere.
Well, you know, it's interesting you brought up Tavares. You really look at it, and I think the question really can be asked is, why did they sign him? Well, was it really needed? And again, it's no offense to him. He's a good player. Offense is not their issue. Their issue has been goaltending and depth at defense, and they don't have either of those. And just to chalk it up to bad luck again, Wall has this amazing Game 6 and then gets injured and can't even dress in Game 7, and they go to Samsonov, and he was fine. Believe me, I thought he was really good.
He was okay.
But I'm not trying to be a Leaf apologist. I just think that, at least to me, the feeling is different. After game four, it was, oh, here we go again. They're going to go quietly into that good night. And then you look at what happened in the final three games, two of them without Matthews. Game seven, obviously, he was compromised, didn't play a ton of minutes. You've got to go to the goaltender that you don't want in game seven, and you lose 2-1 in overtime. So, to a Boston team that, you know, had lost five straight overtime games and dodged one of the most amazing stats I've ever heard, Anthony. If they had lost that game, and if you watched the broadcast, or at least you watched it on Channel 7 or ABC on Saturday, you've heard the stat. Boston was trying to avoid becoming the first team in the history of either baseball, basketball, or hockey to avoid blowing 3-1 series lead in back-to-back years.
It's pretty unbelievable. I mean, I can't imagine it ever happening, because it hasn't. But you thought to yourself, this really hasn't happened once. And keep in mind, Don, we talked about it, this Boston team, not the Boston team of last year that we thought was much, much better. You saw Jim Montgomery had to call out David Pastrnak to make sure he stepped up. And he didn't have the greatest game. He had some shots, but then he scored when it counted. So in the end, does it really matter? But for Boston, they're going to have to play a heck of a lot better against a very well-rested Florida team, even though they swept them in the regular season in order to win. Good for Boston that they avoid that history, but also just, again, you take a look at this Maple Leafs team, and I know they won around last year, but it's just a hump they can't get over. And there's going to be, now when that Nylander contract hits, Don, there's almost $40 million of cap space tied into those four guys.
Yeah.
Marner, Nylander, Tavares, and Matthews. And Marner and Tavares have one more year left each. I don't think anybody's taking Tavares' $11 million contract. He's still a good player. He's not $11 million good.
No.
Marner, maybe. I wonder what that would look like. And if you're going to tell me, look, I think Joseph Wall is pretty good, and he's on an entry-level deal. Matt Murray was on LTIR. If you go into the next season with a $5.5 million cap hit for both your goalies, that's manageable. You could stomach that. And then get a defenseman or a really high-level defenseman for Mitch Marner, or save up at least enough space by trading Marner away that you could bring in a defenseman. Yeah. I don't think that the Maple Leafs take that much of a step back, to be honest. So I think it'll be interesting to see what they do. I wonder if Keefe stays. You say it might have saved him, Don. I just don't know. I mean, they got rid of Dubas because they thought that was the problem, and they kind of had a similar fate this year. I wonder what brass in Toronto feels about another early exit.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. Again, the exit interviews are happening as we speak, getting ready for the offseason there. Watching that game, I just said to myself, I don't think either of these teams are beating Florida. So that will start tonight, Game 1, Bruins and the Panthers down in Sunrise. Last night, the other game, 7, Dallas wins 2-1. Not a big surprise. Good job out of Vegas to force the Game 7 as finally the home team started winning in this series. Not a ton of action. Both teams kind of keeping it close to the vest. But the thing that I kind of noticed is no one feels bad for Vegas because of what they were able to get away with, hate the rule, not the player. But just having Stone available when everybody knew he would be activated at the start of this series. So the defending Stanley Cup champions are gone. Is this a bullet that Dallas survived and now will galvanize them to make a run? We'll see. Colorado-Dallas, I think, is going to be absolutely epic. Dallas is going to have to get right back to work tomorrow at home, so they don't have to travel. But certainly an advantage to the Avalanche, who were able to take care of business against Winnipeg in five games. But good job by Dallas winning a Game 7. We got a couple of Game 7s. I wouldn't call them both classics. Certainly last night was not. I thought Saturday's was. But anytime you can get a couple of Game 7s, one goes into overtime, one right down to the nub, 2-1-goal games, I'll take it.
Yeah, it was a good game, Don. I couldn't believe Brett Howden is still making an impact on that Vegas team.
Right, the guy the Rangers lost in the expansion draft.
Yeah, no, you know what, Don? I think it was actually Oscar Lindbergh that lost the expansion draft.
You're right.
And they traded Howden for Ryan Reeves. Was it Ryan
good
Reeves?
Call.
I don't remember what they traded him for. But yeah, look, I mean, me and my buddy who loved the Rangers looked at each other and said, really, Brett Howden? Wow. All right. So, and you know what? You thought to yourself, you know, Roddick Foxham missed a couple games. Is he going to make an impact in the series? And he sure did. He had a big hit right when the game started. They noted it on the broadcast. Yeah. And then he scores the game winner. This Dallas team was better, and I said I was nervous about this Vegas team, and I guess I was proven right because it did go seven. But we said it earlier in the year, Don. This team was missing something, even though they had all these pieces. Didn't feel like the magical run was in them this year, and they were going to run into a buzzsaw in Dallas. And in the end, I think the better team won. I wonder if this hurts Dallas for how much they played. Now you have a very rested Colorado team that seemed to make mincemeat of the Vezina Trophy winner, and I like Jake Oettinger. But if he has the performance Connor Hellebuck had, this is going to be not a very long series. I still have Dallas to win because I have them as my Western Conference champion. But I feel much less confident now than I did before because I also thought Winnipeg was going to make it here, not Colorado.
Yeah.
I think that Dallas's depth in scoring is going to have to buoy them because I think that obviously the two best players in the series are on Colorado side, Makar and MacKinnon. And you can make an argument that even their lower guys, like Nichushkin and them, are even at the level of a Robertson and a Stankoven and a Sagan. So it should be interesting. I'm going to stick with Dallas, but I'm not very confident.
Well, I'm not going to get crazy. We've seen teams make runs and have their worst series be their first-round series. So give Vegas credit. It's very difficult to slay a champion, and that's what they were going in. You don't think about that when you're a wild card team, especially wild card two, that they were the defending champions, and they did not go quietly into that good night. So we'll see. Dallas and Colorado, I think, is just going to be an epic series, as will Vancouver and Edmonton. And then in the East, we're all set with the Rangers and the Hurricanes. That's already underway. And, of course, Boston will play their game one tonight in Florida against the Panthers.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So let's go to game one, Rangers and the Hurricanes. I was in the building. I know you were watching and completely engaged in what was a terrific game, I thought. And just a reminder of, for especially people that maybe don't, you know, they follow their team or they're not as knowledgeable about the rest of the league. You're reminded just how good this Carolina team is. And even though they lost the game, I could think they could be buoyed by the performance. They were down two a couple of times in this game and hung around. And they almost caught a break at the end on the Trocheck delay a game to get a two-man advantage with 40 seconds to go to tie the game. I thought that we were headed to that until Svechnikov pulled down Lindgren to even things up, which did two things, Anthony. Not only did it at least make it a 6-on-5 after they would pull the goaltender, but put the faceoff on the other end of the ice with 34 seconds left. So real estate-wise, that was a huge, huge opportunity for the Rangers to be able to win the game at that point. But the way I've described it to you and to other people, I was on with Pat O'Keefe on 98.7 ESPN New York after the game. Every game that either of these teams are going to win in this series is going to feel like giving birth. Right? I don't foresee any like 5-1 finals here. They're all going to go right down to the nub. And even in a game where the Rangers had a 3-1 lead after one, feeling great, feeling dominant, by the time that game was over, I think it was two evenly matched teams and was completely up for grabs. And I think that's the way the rest of the series is going to be.
Yeah, well, look, in that second period, Don, the Rangers, I wouldn't say that they were dominated, but they certainly didn't have the better of the play. And you saw that in a series like Washington, but the difference is that Carolina puts a lot more shots on than Washington. And in Game 3 of that Washington series, you saw Washington make a push when there was a one-goal deficit with the goalie pulled and the Rangers couldn't clear. And that 2.5 mm-hmm. minutes of terror. And the difference is Carolina has a lot better offensive players and they shoot a lot more. And then they ended up getting a goal despite Igor's best efforts. It's funny, Donnie gave up 3 goals. And I thought he played a very good game. He gave up the breakaway on the second goal. The first goal was a bouncing puck off a Lafreniere stick that then kind of just fluttered. Not really easy to see. And that third goal, he really had no shot. But he did make some big saves. He had a big save with a minute to go in the third. And, you know, if you're a Ranger fan and didn't have your heart in your mouth in that last 2.5 minutes, I don't know what you were doing. Good for you. I was in a fetal position in the corner. Right. It's going to be a tough series, no question. And, you know, you look at the advanced stats, and the Rangers actually did have the better of the high-danger chances, and they had the better 5-on-5 opportunities, which is awesome. The one thing the Rangers did do a good job of, which everybody noted to me when I said they had to be better 5-on-5, they didn't give a ton of chances to Carolina.
No, only 12 shots on goal through the first 40 minutes.
So that you can hang your hat on and say that was pretty impressive. For a team like Carolina that probably wants to do that to the Rangers, for the Rangers to do that to them is pretty good. And everybody seemed healthy. There was a worry for Adam Fox and a worry for Keandre Miller. They both seemed healthy. Mika Zibanejad was unbelievable. Yeah. Just an unbelievable game, top to bottom. Trocheck had a great game. Panarin with the game-winning goal. He's kind of putting to bed those what's Panarin going to do in the playoffs narratives. That line actually didn't perform a whole lot in the first period because of how crazy things were and the two power plays that took 22 seconds. Panarin was on the ice. Trocheck was on the ice, but it felt like you didn't see that Trocheck-Panarin-Loth line until like late second, early third. So it was a great start to what's going to be a very competitive, interesting series. And if you're the Rangers, you got to be happy that you take the first one.
You know, they don't have a 50-goal scorer, they don't have a 100-point scorer, but you take a look at their lines, all right? The Aho, Svechnikov, and Gensel line speaks for itself. Teravainen and Jarvis are great with Stahl in the middle, and he doesn't lose faceoffs. He's a big body presence who's been in this league forever. I think Drury, Natchez, and Martinook were great in the Islanders series. And then you got a fourth line with Kuznetsov, who could have won a Conn Smythe back when the Capitals won the Cup. Nason plays on their first power play unit. Kotkaniemi is nothing to sleep on. I mean, they roll four lines, and all four are dangerous. I mean, the Rangers can't do that. I mean, the Rangers have a fourth line that I think can be productive, but not that dangerous. I mean, Barkley Goodrow only had a handful of goals. Rempe, the same thing. VC is a really, really nice player, but he's not anybody that's going to, you know, score a bunch of goals for you. And then we know how good the Wenberg line has been defensively, and they're getting opportunities, but they don't score a ton. But depth-wise, at the forwards, Carolina, I think, has an advantage because they can be dangerous no matter who is on the ice for them. Where the Rangers, I think, can take advantage of is with Pesce out, and it looks like he's definitely not going to play tomorrow because he did not make the trip to New York. You know, take advantage of D'Angelo with his dumb penalty, which Carolina fans can complain all they want, but you know that was a penalty. They're lucky it wasn't a major, and take advantage of that because I think they might be a little bit deeper on the blue line. But this is a just terrific hockey team, and it's going to be really tough to beat them. And that's why getting that first game was just so huge for this Ranger team.
Well, they talked about how the man-on-man defense that Carolina employs, as opposed to the kind of zone defense that Washington deploying against the Rangers, could be Roslovic and guys like Roslovic and Kako they could take advantage of. And you saw it on that first goal. Roslovic gets behind the defense. Zibanejad gets lost in the middle somehow by, I believe it was Teravainen, or was it Svechnikov? One of the two, where they kind of lose their man on that 5-on-5 goal and they score. And for as good as Carolina's penalty kill was, boy, the Rangers had, it felt like two set plays and they nailed them, both of them.
Yeah,
on the power play, and again, special teams was a big part. 5-on-5 on the PK is something that you can't ignore if you're the Rangers, and going 2-for-2 on the power play is the difference in the game. But like you said, Don, you got to take advantage now with Pesce out. The Rangers are healthy at the moment, and you don't know how long that's going to last, of course, just because it's the playoffs and people get banged up. They've won their 5 playoff games so far. They've looked great. But Laviolette mentioned it. The team that loses has the hair stand up on the back of their neck and then come out with a snarl. And if they play with the intensity they did at the end of the third, the Rangers are going to have to be ready because one thing they still don't do very well that makes me nervous is clear the puck out of the defensive zone. And if they can't do that, Carolina will be able to take advantage.
Yeah, so. We saw that, especially late in the game. I guess it was game two of the Washington series, where it seemed like John Carlson was like keeping every clearing chance in for the opportunities late, and you certainly saw it last night when they were under siege for the final, really, 3 minutes, or once they pulled the goaltender, a little over 2 minutes, completely under siege at the end of that game. Now, a little bit of a stir. I don't know if you saw from practice that Rempe was working with the extras and leading to speculation that he may be a healthy scratch for tomorrow. I don't think so. I just think he just doesn't get a lot of playing time. Didn't play a lot in the game four win against the Caps. Really didn't play much, I thought, in the third period of either games three or four. And he did commit another penalty. So he has committed a penalty in four of the first five games of the playoffs. So I still believe that if there's
yesterday's penalty, I'll say that. That was ridiculous.
And again, there's five penalties. And again, the last one, you know, barely happened because Carolina and Svechnikov tripped Lindgren right off the faceoff. But, you know, the 4-for-4 was huge. Four for four, and then if they're 2-for-2 on the power play, if that is not a microcosm of what the Rangers' season has been this year, I don't know what is. But, you know, if Rempe's going to continue to take penalties and he's only going to play 7-8 minutes, and they're not going to trust him on the ice late in one-goal games, you know, is there a possibility that he can end up being a healthy scratch? I know a lot of Ranger fans flip out about that. I was told by a few people, I brought it up on this podcast, that if something bad has to happen for Hedl to get back in the lineup, because Peter is so married to his lineups and so loyal to his players. So if they fall behind in a series or if there's an injury, that can open the door for Hedl. But for it not to be something catastrophic, it's going to have to be a player maybe not, you know, doing the job. And could there be at least a scenario where if they lose tomorrow, or if Rempe has a game where he commits a penalty or something, that maybe there can be an avenue? Now, maybe it's Brodzinski. I don't know, but I would think Hedl's going to find a way back in the lineup. He's healthy. I wonder if that would be the avenue for Hedl to come back into the playoff lineup for the Rangers.
Yeah, you know what, Don? Hedl, and if Hedl's not ready, Johnny Brodzinski. I mean, we kind of talked about it before the playoffs started, and I know Carolina, I'm not saying Carolina is a finesse team. They're certainly not. But a guy like Tom Wilson or Dylan McElrath, they do not have. I know Martinook is kind of that guy, and they have guys that can play hard, but this Rangers team, if they've shown anything, is that guys like Lindgren and Cooley and Trouba are willing to step up, Goudreau too, to stand up for themselves. They don't necessarily need a Rempe out there if that fourth line's not going to be the offensive spark plug that they were in game one of that Capitals series. So, and if the league is going to keep a close eye on Rempe here, and every time he hits somebody, it's going to look like a penalty, whether it be roughing or excessive force, it seems like, just the way that they're calling him, it's actually more of a detriment for him to be on the ice than a benefit. And maybe using that speed for Brodzinski against this one-on-one man-style defense could be a benefit to that fourth line. So it would be interesting. I'm not saying that Rempe deserves to be benched, but how long can you go? It's almost like the Knicks with the seven-man rotation, right, Don? How many times can you go with a guy playing 7 minutes and say, we're comfortable doing this, and somebody's got a double shift at some point?
Right, and especially since you've got a Carolina team that can roll four lines, you don't want, you know, to have to be double shifting guys and being exhausted in a close one-goal game. But you also don't want to make any changes when you won five straight games in the playoffs, and that doesn't happen very often. So I don't think anything's going to happen tomorrow, but if they were to lose, then maybe that could open the door, especially since you're going to be on the road in game three. But the fans will really go nuts if Rempe ends up being a healthy scratch. But if it opens the door for a Filip Hedl to jump in, and as long as they win, I think the fans will forgive it. Got a couple of minutes here. Let's close it out with your tweets at Don LaGreca and at Anthony Pusick. Hashtag game misconduct. With No Filter says, has there ever been a playoff series between a mentor coach, Laviolette, against his student, Brind'Amour? And how did that series turn out? I know it was 1947, Anthony.
1947.
I don't remember who and what was in it, but it has happened before. And I will say this, too. Peter Laviolette was not a mentor to Brind'Amour. He coached him. Brind'Amour was a veteran. They're not that far difference in age. So he coached him, but Brind'Amour had been in the league a long time by the time he had gotten to Carolina. He had been on the Blues. He had been on the Flyers for a long time. But I understand your point, and it's a good catch by you. Avi says, I could not listen, but sounded like the Rangers were under siege. I could only listen, but it sounded like the Rangers were under siege at the end of the game. What do they need to fix for the next game to avoid this moving forward? Igor won't hold strong every game like this. It's just the pushback of a team that's really good. I was surprised that the Rangers played as well as they did in the first period. They didn't really dominate as far as shots. It was 7-6 Rangers. Matter of fact, the Rangers actually outshot them until the third. But I do understand, especially in the third, that the ice was tilted. I think the score had a lot to do with that. But Avi and everybody else, this Carolina team is going to be heard from. They're not going away. So I don't think there's going to be any kick your feet up and relax moments in this series if the Rangers are going to win. Every game, I think, is going to be exactly like game one.
Well, Don, if you want an answer, ESPN Stats and Info had it. I knew I saw it somewhere. In regards to Peter Laviolette and Rod Brind'Amour, this is the fourth series in NHL history to feature head coaches where one had previously captained a cup winner with the other as the head coach. The only other matchups, now there's been four instances. It's only happened twice with people. It was Dick Irvin and Hap Day. They won the cup together with Toronto in 1932 and then clashed while at the helm of the Canadiens and Maple Leafs, respectively, in the 44 semifinals, 45 semifinals, and 47 Stanley Cup final. So that is the instance in which we've seen this. It's only happened twice, and it hasn't happened since the start of the Michael Kay Show in 1947.
Courtney says, hi, Don and Anthony. Loving the NHL playoffs so far. What was your favorite moment from round one, and which team would be your biggest underdog for the second round? There were so many great moments. I loved every part of Game 7 on Saturday. I really had a ball with that. As far as like great moments, I'm trying to think of, because there weren't like that many classic series.
I'd say Vancouver's insane comeback, Colton Sisson's backhand.
The Besser.
Because that changes the outcome of that series, in my opinion.
That was big.
You're
that
looking at big. A completely different series if that puck goes in. So I'm going with the Predators and Canucks.
I got to look at the teams that are left right now, the biggest underdog to me. Because you got Colorado's won a cup recently. Dallas I had going to the Stanley Cup final. Vancouver and Edmonton. And then Rangers, Hurricanes are pretty even. And then Panthers, Bruins. I would say the biggest dog to me of the four is probably Boston.
Well, ESPN Bet has it as the Canucks as the biggest dog, plus 220.
Because everybody's so high on Edmonton.
Everyone's high on Edmonton, and to be honest, I kind of didn't believe in the Canucks without their goalie, but they're still playing pretty good defensively. They actually won these games defensively, not offensively, which I think can benefit them against a team like Edmonton. I agree with you, Don. I don't think Vancouver is the biggest dog, just because we've seen the way that Edmonton kind of lose themselves in these playoffs. I would say that Boston, in my mind, is the biggest underdog. Cause I just think Florida's a beast, and it's going to be hard for them to win in a seven-game series, even though they beat them four times this year.
Now, the reason I say Boston is because Florida, I just think, is an absolute beast in looking at who's the biggest underdog in their respective series. But if Boston were to get by Florida, considering their pedigree and their experience, I would say that they would move up. Like Vancouver, it's been a while since this has even been a playoff team, so there's not a lot of experience there at all. I would be more impressed with Boston beating Florida than Vancouver beating Edmonton. I'm sorry, that's just me, because not like Edmonton's got a ton of experience either in the postseason, and they've only gone to the conference final once with Connor McDavid, so it's not like it's that much more than Vancouver. Of the teams that are left, the one team where I would say I can't believe they won the cup, I guess, would be Vancouver. Even though I give the Panthers a major edge on the Bruins, it's got to be Boston or Vancouver. So I don't want to confuse you with a word salad here, but hopefully you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with you. I think the other two series are coin flips in the sense of who could win. I think I had Edmonton winning because I had the Predators beating Vancouver anyway, and that was before Demko was out. Demko's still out. We don't know when he's coming back. I think Edmonton's going to win that series. And I think Boston just, again, I know, teams have played seven-game series and teams have come off long layoffs and they've lost. And Boston seemed to have Florida's number. They can come out and win tonight, for all I know.
Yeah, well,
but
they can also blow a 3-1 series lead like they did last year,
right,
almost did this year.
And Bobrovsky's playing really well. Not that Swayman isn't, but when you look at top-to-bottom offensive talent, Florida's got it. And if Pasternak is going to be a no-show for a majority of these games, it's going to be a problem for Boston. So I would be very surprised if Florida doesn't win that series. And I would probably, I'd say, yeah, I'd be very surprised if Edmonton doesn't beat Vancouver.
And listen, don't listen to us. My bracket's a mess.
Yeah, we're so, hacks, so I don't even, you know.
So forget that. I'm not getting a jersey for myself, I can tell you that. All right, we've got Wednesday coming up. We're going to hook back up with EJ Raddick and get his thoughts on the second round. One game tonight. Of course, that's Boston in Florida to take on the Panthers. And then we've got two games tomorrow. The doubleheader starts at 7 with the Hurricanes and Rangers of the Garden, followed by the Stars playing host to the Avalanche. And then finally, Oilers Canucks will get going on Wednesday for their game one. And we've got a round two, so excitement still abounds. So let's do this again on Wednesday, Anthony.
Let's do it.
All right, want to get in touch with us at Don LaGreca, at Anthony Pusick. Back with you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.